This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at Will Pruitt and at Barnett Jake. On today's show, Vince McMahon and Kevin Owens butt heads, and a discussion of the Mae Young Classic Finals. So, Jake, a lot happens in wrestling every week, but over about an hour on Tuesday night, wrestling was pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how well that final segment of SmackDown came across. You know, like, it was the first time, and I guess, you know, Vince McMahon's appearance and memorable performance definitely made that feel pretty special. But Kevin Owens was, you know, he was equally a part of that. And I think his character on SmackDown lately, you know, since he started this angle with the McMahon family, he's just really found a groove. And it's so much better than the Face of America stuff that he was doing in the past. It's just, it finally feels like Kevin Owens is on the right track and he's doing what he should be doing, which is talking trash and beating people up who, you know, in a shocking manner. And I think Vince was the perfect target for that, because clearly, just based on the reaction, people did not expect what they saw. And I think the touch of color definitely helped, even though I think the way they got there was probably a little excessive. But just a brilliant segment overall.
Yeah. And talking about like Owens transitioning from the new Face of America thing to just being Kevin Owens again, it really does feel right. It feels like they finally figured out that not all villains on SmackDown need to be foreign menaces, and that some of them can just be bad people. And they got there with Kevin Owens. And watching this whole thing evolve, I mean, it took a while. And that's something I've noticed with SmackDown overall, is stories take a while sometimes there, and sometimes you just have to go along for that ride. Look at how long The Miz and Dolph Ziggler told their story for about a year ago. And it seems like that show does move at a slightly slower pace than, say, Raw, which is burning through every potential match John Cena could have immediately. But you're seeing Owens evolve into this character that is so, like, on the edge, so ready to hurt people. And I think it works perfectly, especially going into what is going to be the best match of all time, a Hell in a Cell match against Shane McMahon. I mean, we all knew that was likely to be the conclusion coming out of a Vince McMahon and Kevin Owens segment, but the way they got there was remarkable. And yeah, the physicality that they had was great. I agree with you about the headbutt being a little weird and dangerous, but the end result I thought was really fantastic. It was dynamic. Stephanie confronting Owens at the end was also a nice little touch. It felt real in a way. There are things about this angle that feel really good. And I've got to say, I'm very excited, and this won't shock anyone who listens regularly, but I'm very excited for that Owens and Shane McMahon match.
I think it'll be better than people expect, because not only does it fit well into the story they're telling, which is kind of this ultra-violent feud between Shane and the McMahon family in general and Kevin Owens, but it's what Shane does well. I mean, it, you know, he falls off of tall things and goes through tables.
Boy, does he.
Yeah, whatever he can, you know, fit into the match in terms of a crazy spectacle, he's likely to try to do it. I guess one of my takeaways from the way this has been built is it's really striking the difference between not only what Kevin Owens has been doing, but how they treat angles that involve the McMahons versus how they treat angles that involve anybody else. Because I guarantee you, if, you know, Owens was feuding with Sami Zayn or some other babyface on SmackDown heading into a Hell in a Cell match, it wouldn't get billboarded in this way. He wouldn't be allowed to, you know, get the kind of heat he got on Tuesday's show. And the babyfaces wouldn't be set up nearly as sympathetically. It would probably be the type of 50-50 stuff that they do for just about every other feud on the show. So I think, you know, if they were able to apply some of the I guess the lessons you can learn through what they did on Tuesday in terms of fan response, and take a look at how they write the rest of the show, they'd have a much better pattern for success, because clearly, you know, what they did resonated with people, and it's been a pretty hearty conversation all over the web ever since.
It is telling that they don't write for others the way they write for themselves, and it's harmful to the show at times. It's like there's this, in WWE especially, there's this elevated few that get the good stories and the good writing, and then there's everyone else, and sometimes everyone else even involves your world champions on the shows, like your Jinder Mahals, where it's like, oh, you're just kind of getting the leftover stuff, aren't you? The good stuff is getting done by Vince McMahon and Kevin Owens over there. You're just getting the weird slideshow comedy that we would have given to Chris Jericho 10 years ago. And it doesn't work, and it isn't effective. But they did do something really remarkable with Owens and Vince. How do you... So we still have a few weeks to go between now and Hell in a Cell. How do you get from Kevin Owens busted open Vince McMahon, you know, assaulted him on TV? How do you get from there to Hell in a Cell without losing the steam that they generated on Tuesday night?
I think you have to substitute another babyface for the McMahons to take that abuse for at least another week or two until they're ready to bring back Shane, you know, for the, you know, the final push into Hell in a Cell. So I guess that's where I'm kind of at a loss for how exactly you make that happen, because you can really only have that one triumphant returning Shane McMahon segment where he comes back and he strikes a blow against Owens. And
can
it's
he
sort
split
of,
the entire roster that's standing out on the stage and they all look deadly serious?
Some kind of Dragon Ball Z type entrance of some kind.
Basically do the exact same thing he did in 2009 when he returned to fight Randy Orton.
Are the punches going to look as bad as they did then?
I hope so.
I guess it's always possible. I just don't know who fits right into that slot for him to assault. You know, it's like Sammy or Ty Dillinger. Like who do you put in there to be Owen's punching bag for a week or two until Shane comes back for that segment?
I mean, maybe it is Sammy. They certainly had. I think there may be a reason they had Owens and Sammy kind of have their little backstage confrontation this past week, and Sammy would be a logical player to take the abuse from Owens if they wanted to do that. I don't think you can put like AJ Styles in that role or a bigger babyface on the show. It's certainly not a place for Shinsuke Nakamura or Randy Orton. So I'm not sure if it's not Sammy, who it could be. Could you imagine Randy Orton coming out and going, "You assaulted Vince McMahon. Seriously?" And it's like, you punted him in the head, Randy. You cause the brain damage that caused the show to be how it is.
The moral authority sort of evaporates when that happens. But I guess there really aren't enough notable baby faces on SmackDown to have like this huge variety to choose from. You know, it's basically the guys who are in the main event picture, like, you know, Styles and Orton and Nakamura, and then you kind of fall down pretty far. And so, you know, Sammy seems like the most likely choice, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, I don't know if I want to see him be a punching bag unless they have, you know, some kind of long-term arc in mind for him where he's actually going to be on the upswing after it's over. But I just don't have the confidence that that's the case.
If you like what we do here at ProWrestling.net and the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast, there are a couple things you could do to support us. First, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars, tell people why you like us. Those help get our show out in front of more people. The second, become a ProWrestling.net member. You can support the site and get ad-free access to the site, access to our member-exclusive audio reviews of Raw, SmackDown, NXT. Just because you don't hear it on this podcast doesn't mean it doesn't happen. And we also have the ProWrestling.net weekly audio show where Jason Powell usually runs through the news of the week and often breaks first-run news. He does a weekly Q&A every week for members as well, and you get bonus episodes of some shows like the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. If you want to become a ProWrestling.net member, for as low as $7.50 a month if you just want to try it out for a month, or $5.50 a month if you want to take the annual option. It knocks a couple bucks off. It's pretty great. Go to prowrestling.net, click the membership link, and you can be signed up in minutes. Thank you guys so much for listening, and enjoy the rest of the show. So, immediately following this awesome Vince McMahon and Kevin Owens angle on Tuesday, we got an awesome presentation of the Mae Young Classic Finals. And what was your overall impression of the finals of the Mae Young Classic?
Well, I think the production of it was extremely well done. You know, I think they hit the right note in terms of communicating that, you know, this is a sort of a turning point in you know, hopefully women getting a larger share of the time on WWE programming. And it's a change in how, you know, how their attitude continues to shift away from hiring, you know, gymnasts and bikini models to sort of do poorly designed matches to, you know, sort of treating women like true athletes. And I think, you know, the tournament itself has been a success in that sense. You know, it seems like fans have finally sort of come around and there's a general positive reaction to these women competing, whereas a few years ago that wasn't always the case, where it was still, you know, lots of catcalls and sort of negative fan behavior. And so I think they've turned the corner on a lot of that, and the from a promotional sense it was a huge success. So I'm hopeful, you know, that the future going forward away from the Mae Young Classic is them continuing to advance, you know, the amount of time, the amount of segments, the amount of feuds, the amount of pay-per-view matches that we see from the women's divisions, because I think they've, you know, they've still got a lot of room to improve in that regard. There's still not enough singles feuds. There's not enough important characters. The women are still oftentimes in multi-man matches to fill, you know, their indicated slot on a particular pay-per-view. I think there's, you know, whether it's a difference between the way Triple H and Stephanie see it and trying to, you know, put that vision forward with Vince and Kevin Dunn or whoever needs to be convinced to make that happen. Now is the time, because they're never going to have a better opportunity.
Yeah, and to emphasize that point, women were 4% of Raw on Monday night. That comes from Kate Foray's Raw Breakdown project that people can find. It's a weekly project that she does, kind of a graphic design thing, saying how, you know, giving different percentages of different things on Raw. And one of the things she tracks is women's wrestling in that, and it's kind of fascinating. But expanding that out, you talked about the fan reaction, and I was really worried going into the Mae Young Classic Finals because, man, this isn't the Mae Young Classic crowd. It's a SmackDown crowd in Las Vegas. I was worried that the match was going to be greeted with silence, that no one was going to care, that people were going to be leaving and walking out like it was a normal 205 Live episode in the middle of the match, and that it would just make the entire, that it would bring down the entire tournament in my eyes. Like, I was really, really worried. But the opposite happens, and Kairi Sane and Shayna Baszler were able to capture the imaginations of this fan base in a really fun way. I was delighted to watch and see, wow, the reaction to these women is growing as the match is going on. Not everyone in this arena knew who they were coming in, but they're learning and they're cheering and they realize who the babyface and who the heel is in this match. I thought it was a really nice presentation, both with match layout, with video packages that they showed, with celebrities and people at ringside to tell you how important it was, and to tell the live crowd how important it was. I want to praise all of that. Like, I thought they did a really, really nice job on most of it. Jake, I don't want Jim Ross to call another match. He was awful. He wasn't just awful at calling the match. He was awful in terms of recognizing the other women in the tournament. He obviously didn't care enough to actually learn who was at ringside. At one point during the match, he referred to Asuka, of all people, as a fan at ringside. And I was watching, like, I had to rewind. I was like, are you kidding me? Asuka is sitting there with other WWE women wrestlers, and he refers to them as fans at ringside without a sense of irony or anything. He didn't care. He didn't bother to learn anything for this. And I thought Lita, of all people, was coming to his rescue so often on this live special. I was like, wow, I actually want to hear Lita call more matches more than I want to hear JR do it, because Lita's educated, she's engaged, and is actually connecting with real live emotion right now, where Jim Ross is trying to be a parody of himself and doing a really poor job. I can't say enough how bad Jim Ross was on the Mae Young Classic Finals, and how, to me, it brought the overall presentation of it, which was great, down a notch.
Yeah, I thought JR improved throughout the rounds of the tournament. Like the first round felt a bit phoned in a way, and I don't know if that was just because the commentary was dubbed over, you know, from the studio after the fact, or, you know, it seemed like he improved from the, you know, the first round to the second round to the quarters to the semis. You know, there was some, you know, it seemed like he got more in touch with what was going on with the matches and with the talent. But I think there was a bit of a regression on at the finals, and I'm not sure if it was you know, just a lack of preparation or what happened there. But it seemed similar to the way that he called the New Japan shows for Access TV that were, you know, in Long Beach. It just, there was a decided lack of interest in what he was calling that, and maybe, you know, he didn't feel that way personally, but it came across that way on television or on the network, regardless of you know, of how he felt about it, you know, internally. So I don't know if he'll be given a lot of those opportunities again. You know, it's difficult because he's a legend, and you know, you don't want to go out of your way to say negative things about him. And I still have the utmost respect for his accomplishments. And, you know, he was the announcer of my childhood, but it certainly wasn't a good performance from JR. And it wasn't what the women in the ring deserved, to be honest.
And that's, I think, the thing that disappointed me the most about it, is you had Kairi Sane and Shayna Baszler working really hard to have a great match. And I think they did have a great match, and to invest people in, to get people invested in it emotionally. And Ross was not honoring the work they were doing, and that was really, really poor. But talking about that great match, I think WWE walks away from this tournament with multiple stars made in it, but especially with stars made out of Kairi Sane and Shayna Baszler. I want to see them on NXT. I want to see them on the main roster soon. Like, I think they absolutely made stars and have some impressive women, not just with them, but especially those two. Those performances in the finals were great. I thought the final few, like the ending sequence of the final match with Kairi finally getting up to hit that elbow drop was really, really well done. And there was legitimate emotion you could feel in that building at that moment. And again, the roar of the crowd was so noticeable there. And yeah, I thought that was really, really nice. I still kind of doubt or wonder why they went with not doing this at Full Sail and doing it on the road. But this was a nice ending to the tournament. And I think you leave now, obviously, Kairi Sane getting an NXT title shot. But you leave now with Baszler, too, who should be moved into NXT or moved on to the main roster and can do a lot for WWE. And you have just a remarkable stable of women outside of them.
Well, I mean, you know, there were some members of, you know, the ones that were already signed that appeared at the NXT taping, because I won't get into spoilers, but there are some members of the Classic that will be appearing on NXT in the coming weeks. And so that's a nice surprise, you know, to see them make it onto TV soon. But I think my takeaway from the match itself is that, you know, they may have sacrificed something by choosing to go with Baszler over one of the more experienced women. You know, there were some moments in the match where, you know, how green Baszler is sort of shined through a little bit. But I think they did the right thing for what I believe is their long-term goal of eventually getting Ronda Rousey and the four horsewomen in to to sort of create a moment for them at a WrestleMania or another major show to actually have that match. And so I think that probably overruled having, you know, the best possible match with, say, you know, Kairi and Toni Storm in the finals or something, you know, because I think that may have been a better match, the semifinal match between those two than what we saw just from a pure in-ring standpoint at the final. But it was a well-paced and well-put-together match. I think they worked together well, and they, you know, their spots seemed to line up really well. And then some of the reversals and the final elbow drop really felt like they had some emotional weight to them. And so I take my hat off to them. I think it was a very good match. And I think the atmosphere with having, you know, the celebrities at ringside and having the full WWE level of production definitely made it into an accomplishment, you know, as a final for a tournament. I hope this is a positive step for the way women are treated in the organization overall. I really do.
So, Jake, final question. What's making you happy in pro wrestling this week?
Honestly, I think we just covered the two bits that really caught my interest. You know, I normally this is where we fit in something about New Japan, but I wasn't a huge fan of the Destruction Show. And so I want to say, you know, probably the Mae Young Classic. I think the way that it came across was ultimately really beneficial for women in the WWE in general, and particularly for, you know, the half a dozen women that will probably end up getting contract offers coming out of it. I think they have a real chance to make some long-term stars out of that tournament. So it definitely made me happy.
And I'll just say Braun Strowman continues to be impressive. He's really dynamic in his performances. I, watching Braun Strowman at Raw on Monday night, I found myself thinking, this guy could be John Cena. This guy has the intangibles that it would take to be that top star, and he could absolutely do it. And I just keep watching Braun Strowman and thinking his potential climbs higher and higher every time I watch him. And hopefully WWE sees that, and the plan isn't just to be done with him in 6 months or something as far as a top star goes, but that they see him as a major part of their future, because he deserves to be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you see him away from the ring, he, you know, he's kind of a teddy bear of a guy too. So there could be a future for him. I mean, there could be a future for him that's not as a complete caricature or a monster. You know, it seems like he could be a fairly dynamic character if they decide to make him one. So I hope he gets that opportunity. You know, he certainly improved at such a rate that it's him, you know, anybody who would have predicted where he would be today, you know, a year, 18 months ago, we probably would have called them liars, you know. Yeah. So he's had a remarkable ascension to where he is, and he continues to get better. And so I hope that, you know, goes into the future, and he, you know, another year from now, we're talking about him being, you know, at the point where it's like, well, does Roman Reigns really need to be the guy anymore? Because Braun Strowman's just getting that big.
Yeah, ideally that would happen, because I think he could also allow a lot of room for Roman Reigns to explore what he wants to actually be character-wise. So, yeah, I think that'll wrap it up for us, Jake. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. For more, please subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review, show us that you appreciate us, and if you want even more content, check out ProWrestling.net's membership option.